This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Later in the program, we'll hear about how doctors at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center are using virtual reality in a pioneering approach to cardiovascular care. And we'll talk with the mother of a patient who underwent the procedure. But first, there are approximately 24.9 million people in forced labor worldwide at any given time, the International Labor Organization found in 2016. Reliable statistics are difficult to come by, but research from Polaris, an organization that analyzes data from the U.S. National Human Trafficking Hotline, indicates that reports of human trafficking have increased each year since 2015. Joining me to discuss Human Trafficking Awareness Month are Ohio Department of Public Safety Office of Criminal Justice Services State Anti-Trafficking Coordinator Maria Bush. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
The Salvation Army Anti-Human Trafficking Manager and End Slavery Cincinnati Coalition Manager, Aaron Meyer. Thanks for being here, Aaron.
Thank you.
And Eyes Open International President and Co-Founder, Harold D'Souza. Welcome, Harold.
Thank you, Lucy, and thank you, friends in Cincinnati.
If you have any questions, you can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at wvxu.org, or send us a tweet. And to report human trafficking, call 513-800-1863. So I'd like to start the discussion by kind of defining what human trafficking is. I know there are many different types of human trafficking. Aaron, do you mind jumping in on that question?
Sure. As you mentioned, there are many types of trafficking. Here in Cincinnati and Ohio as a whole, we've seen various types of trafficking. There are two main types that the law recognizes, sex and labor trafficking. And really what it means is it's the exploitation of men, women, children who, through force, fraud, and coercion, who are then being exploited for the purposes of someone else's financial gain.
Gotcha.
Either in the sex or labor industry.
Yeah. And do you mind talking to us a little bit, too, about the difference between human trafficking and human slavery?
You know, it is, it's a pretty similar term used these days. So people sometimes call human trafficking modern day slavery. However, the movement has been shifting away from that term because it can be confusing for people and it does have the connotation of historical slavery and can kind of muddle the impact and the nature of the situation. So we are moving more towards human trafficking as a field, and that is the language that the law uses when it's defining what the type of crime is.
Gotcha. And Maria, do you mind talking with us a little bit about what Ohio's Human Trafficking Task Force does?
Absolutely. So the Governor's Ohio Human Trafficking Task Force was created by executive order. And so in January 2021, Governor DeWine signed an executive order that basically charged 14 state agencies with using their resources to build a more coordinated, comprehensive policy response to human trafficking. And so my job at the Department of Public Safety is to basically coordinate those efforts. And so our coordinated response really mirrors the U.S. State Department's 3P framework to prevent human trafficking, protect victims, and prosecute offenders. And so we do that in all kinds of ways because we know that state agencies have such a broad scope and such strategic intersections that basically enhance our ability to identify victims and connect them to supportive services and support law enforcement. So our initiatives are very broad. They include training. They include providing funding to local organizations to do actual prevention programming with at-risk youth. It includes policy change to make sure that our kind of state systems are accessible to victims who are trying to access things like Medicaid and cash assistance. It's looking like leveraging touch points within state agencies to support law enforcement. For example, the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction has been working more closely with human trafficking task forces on investigations. So it's really bringing the weight of state government to bear in the state level anti-trafficking response.
Yeah. So how prevalent is human trafficking in Ohio, Maria?
This is a great question. And we are continuing to, I think, just learn more as time passes and as we get better at collecting data. I think one of the barriers in understanding the prevalence of human trafficking in Ohio is that good human trafficking data are hard to come by. And so what we're trying to do at this point is collect data on the number of victims identified by different systems. And so this is something that this administration has worked toward, is how many victims of human trafficking are identified by law enforcement, by children's services, by our prison system, by juvenile court systems, and then making sense of that data. And so in 2019, the University of Cincinnati actually finished a human trafficking prevalence study in which they looked at data from 14 different sources to get a sense of how many victims are there in Ohio who've been identified. And what that study found was from 2014 to 2016, there were an estimated 1,032 known victims of human trafficking, and then 4,209 individuals who displayed kind of vulnerabilities or at-risk factors commonly associated with human trafficking. And so that's not necessarily a true prevalence, but that's really a number of how many people have been identified and have hit our systems. But we do know that the reality is a lot of times victims don't intersect with our systems. Human trafficking, as we know, is underidentified, is underreported. So at this time, we do have data on kind of moving closer to how many people are identified and still working to understand what is the true prevalence.
Yeah. So Harold, I'd like to move to you because you have lived this experience. You're a survivor of trafficking. Can you give us, I know this is this has been a while ago for you and your family, but can you kind of inform our listeners about what you and your family experienced and when you went through this?
Yeah, thanks, Lucy, for doing this program on 91.7, especially on human labor trafficking. This is the prevention month, January. I am working to start a prevention month on prosecution for the prosecutors, that there should be a month announced. But labor trafficking or dead bondage, what my family went through in the year 2003 was terrible. It was a big trauma. And that's why, Lucy, I want to be the voice, courage, hope, and freedom for all the victims, not only in Ohio or nationally, but globally. But at the same breath, I would like to educate our listeners today that labor trafficking happens at a very huge scale in Ohio, in Cincinnati, and every town. And people are not aware. Like what Maria said, you know, like we do not have data. I always tell, even when I was at the White House with President Barack Obama and President Donald Trump, that in human labor trafficking, out of 100%, 80% are foreign nationals. And out of 80%, 70% are male. And even today, 69% of the victims do not come out and talk for justice or for freedom. For simple reason, we do not have male shelter homes. We do not have resources. So how are we going to provide them justice? I am working on a freedom survey report of ICE Open International. I have more than 100 applicants with me. I have not shared that with any of the delegates in Ohio. But these delegates, not one has ever called 911 or 513-800-1863 or 1-888-373-7888, National Human Trafficking Hotline number. So just creating awareness, Lucy May, that you're doing today, I think that itself is a first step towards prevention and protection of victims and creating a fear for the perpetrators. I just like to end on one note, Lucy May, that when you survive one victim, you survive one survivor. But when you prosecute one perpetrator, you are saving 100 victims. So at the same breath, I would like to share with all our community members, friends, that this is a teamwork. It's not only the job of the law enforcement agencies or NGOs, but every community members can play a big role in ending or combating human trafficking. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and Harold, I know you're a very educated person, and this is, I don't think people realize how something like this can happen to an educated person like you. Are you able to take us back a little bit to what happened to your family all those years ago and you know, how it happened to you?
Yeah, this is a million-dollar question, Lucy May. I think labor trafficking or even sex trafficking has got nothing to do with caste, color, creed, religion, nationality, or education. I was highly educated back in India. I had a good job, but I was invited on an H-1B visa. That's a work visa. On a $75,000 salary, per year plus benefits. So that was mucho money, right? So, but I was manipulated, tricked, and trapped. And the moment I landed, you know, we became a victim of labor trafficking and debt bondage. We were made to work in a restaurant. And friends, you have to understand how this industry of labor trafficking and debt bondage operates. I can share four examples. It happens at restaurants, gas stations, convenience stores, motels, and various other industries like agriculture, farming. But how this industry operates, the perpetrator will provide accommodation within the premises. If you're staying in a restaurant, they'll provide accommodation within the premises or maybe just 100 meters away from the restaurant. What happens? Labor is available 24 hours. You cannot say it is raining, there is no storm, I cannot come to work. So that is how they operate. And they do not have to pay you salary because they take care of your lodging and boarding. Number three, they'll tell you, okay, when you're going back to Mexico, you're going back to India, I will give you the money back or your salary. So every trafficker withholds in labor trafficking, Lucy, minimum 8 months of wages. So what happens? That victim is under the clutches of the perpetrator and he or she cannot run. So we have to be very cautious. And that is the reason that many victims are not aware of the resources. Many foreign nationals in labor trafficking are scared of Americans. I myself was very scared because the traffickers or the perpetrators manipulate you and brainwash you by telling that Americans do not like brown-skinned guys or they do not like foreign nationals, which is totally wrong. It is the Americans who rescued me, who gave me freedom. And two living examples are here on the show. That's Maria Bush and Erin Meyer. And I've been working with them. So I think just creating awareness and prevention is very important. Thank you.
Yeah. That's terrific. Do you mind talking to us a little bit about just how you finally broke free? I mean, I know we've talked in the past and it was very difficult with all the pressure that you were feeling from the perpetrator. How did you and your family finally get out from under this situation?
This is a God's blessing and the blessing of the community members. I never thought I will survive. I never thought I'll be living today and talking to you on your 91.7 show, Lucy May. And the best and beautiful part about you, Lucy May, I would like to educate, enlighten, and empower all our community members that we need to track or map every victim or every survivor. No one is tracking the survivors. Once he or she is rescued, where that survivor is after 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years. I really salute you, Lucy May. Like, you know, I don't know how we met earlier in our some shows, but you have been tracking me for so many years. And that's a huge blessing. And how I got out of my situation, I had no possibilities of coming out of my situation. My trafficker has hired a guy to shoot me or kill me. And this is not a joke. You know, you see in the movies, but when you get shot and when you have been threatened to kidnap your kids, your wife being sexually abused, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There is a Bollywood and a Hollywood movie coming up on me because I cannot share in a 30-minute talk show that, or any survivor, not me, any survivor or victim cannot talk in 30 minutes what has transpired in the span of like 10 years or 20 years of his or her life. Because Lucy May, I just want to share with our friends who are listening on the show today that every individual goes through challenges in life, maybe during the pandemic, broken relationship, ill health. You might get abused once or twice in your lifetime. But in the case of labor trafficking or sex trafficking, you get abused. You get physically abused, mentally tortured every second, every minute, every hour, every day, every week, every month, every year. And that sticks to you. Yeah. So individuals have to be trauma-informed. That it's not easy for a victim once he or she is rescued that he or she will flip overnight. It's not easy. That's why many victims get re-victimized. Right. So in my case, it took me a lot of time. It's not easy. Yeah. And I would like to thank all the viewers today on this show that it's the community members who have played a very big role in shaping and strengthening my family life to success. I always tell they did not save one life, they saved four lives. That's my wife, Dancy, my two sons, Bradley and Rowan.
Right.
So that's a huge thing. Thank you.
Definitely. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about human trafficking. Our guests are Ohio Department of Public Safety Office of Criminal Justice Services State Anti-Trafficking Coordinator Maria Bush, the Salvation Army Anti-Human Trafficking Manager and End Slavery Cincinnati Coalition Manager Aaron Meyer, and Eyes Open International President and Co-Founder Harold D'Souza. To report human trafficking locally, call 513-800-1863. So, Aaron, I'd like to turn to you. First, can you tell us a little bit about what the Salvation Army and End Slavery Cincinnati does locally? And then also, do you mind addressing this issue? I think a lot of people think of human trafficking as a stranger kind of snatching folks off the street, but the research seems to indicate that it's more often perpetrated by someone the victim knows. Can you tell us a little bit about what your organization does and what you've found in that regard?
Yeah, so our organization works with all survivors of trafficking, any age, any gender identity, and any immigration status. And what we do is we really work with the individual to try to develop goals, empower that individual to achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve. So that may include helping with food or shelter, basic needs. It might include helping to navigate barriers to finding healthy relationships, processing trauma, also, you know, working with job improvement, connecting to other resources related to potentially drug treatment, employment. It really depends on what the individual is interested in, what their needs are, and what their goals are in the moment. We do work with individuals who are currently being exploited and individuals who have been out of their trafficking situation for years. So the needs really do vary. Part of what we also do is to do outreach, because as you mentioned, it is a, you know, it is a clandestine crime. It's hard to identify. It is often those, it is more about relationships and less often about a kidnapping. So prevention work and helping people to understand what that exploitation looks like really impacts identification and those who are being exploited getting connected to support and getting out of their situation. It is much more often what we're seeing is individuals who are building a relationship, whether that's in sex trafficking, it's more often a boyfriend or a close friend is that relationship that's built, or someone else you know through the neighborhood that's trusted. Whereas in labor trafficking, it's more often an employer, but still someone who you build a relationship with the assumption that their role is to be, you know, someone who is your employer, a professional role, someone who is going to still, though, respect you and live up to what they have promised to provide you in your employment role. And so it is based on oftentimes the recruitment is those relationships and those connections to people that we otherwise would assume or think are safe and are considering our best interests.
Yeah. So Maria, what are the big misconceptions about human trafficking? Are there people who are more easily drawn into that whole thing, or are there misconceptions about who the victims are and who they're not?
Yes, there are. So I think Aaron hit on that really well. There is a lot of misconception, I think, resulting from various movies, from PSAs, from public awareness campaigns, this idea that random strangers are snatched out of Target or snatched out of the mall, thrown into a van, drugged, sold for sex. I think we are given such sensationalized ideas of what human trafficking looks like. And because of that, we just completely miss people who are truly being exploited, like Aaron said, in the context of relationships, where maybe there is a romantic partner or someone who is exploiting somebody's drug addiction, or someone who, you know, came from another country recently and is working a certain job, but you and I aren't necessarily seeing that the employer was withholding documentation and withholding compensation. And so we are given these messages, and then that can kind of change the lens by which we look at the world, where we see a viral Facebook post about, I don't know, zip ties on car mirrors, or we see a Facebook post about a white man that was sitting outside of Target. And we can buy into that, I think, because of movies, because of PSAs, because of the messages that we are given. And so I think a lot of that can float around social media. I think that there were a lot of kind of misinformation stories promoted during 2020, kind of these sensationalized ideas that this weird thing that happened to someone at Kroger had something to do with human trafficking. But when we look at true cases and we listen to the stories of people who have endured human trafficking and exploitation, most often it is not the case that it looked like those viral Facebook posts involving kidnapping and stranger abduction.
Yeah. So Maria, why do you think it is so hard to identify people who are victims of human trafficking? Is it hard for the victims to come forward, or is there something else at play there?
Yes, I think there's a lot of challenges. And so part of it is that lack of understanding by the community at times for what a victim might look like. Because oftentimes a victim of crime doesn't look like the traditional idea of a victim. Oftentimes it might be someone, again, who is a foreign national and is getting underpaid at work. It could be kind of a kid at school who is involved in the criminal justice system and maybe is engaging in risky behavior at an early age. It could look like someone who demonstrates violent outbursts as a result of their trauma. It could look like someone who's in an intimate partner, violent relationship or domestic violent relationship. So it looks like all these other things that kind of shield us from identifying them as a victim of human trafficking. And so for that reason, I think it's just really important that we train systems that intersect with those who are vulnerable to identify true risk factors of human trafficking. And also do human trafficking screens. And so as part of the governor's human trafficking task force, a lot of our systems do universal human trafficking screenings. So everyone who enters a state juvenile correctional facility, a state prison, a state mental health hospital is screened for indicators of human trafficking. And then I think alongside with that, oftentimes victims may be fearful to report human trafficking because they're being threatened or family members are being threatened. Or there may even be a language barrier or lack of awareness that there are resources available to assist them. They may view themselves as criminals. They may have been told, hey, you're illegal, you're undocumented, and if you do report, you're going to get deported and you're going to go to jail. Or they're told, if you report, I'm going to hurt you, I'm going to hurt your families. And so there's a lot of fear that can keep someone from self-reporting. And then another huge thing that can be a challenge to identification are trauma bonds. We keep kind of mentioning that traffickers often play the role of a romantic partner or an intimate partner. And so there is kind of that close romantic relationship at play there that can also keep someone from self-identifying as a victim of crime, particularly when that trafficker is someone that they have that close romantic relationship with.
Yeah. Well, in the last couple minutes that we have, Harold, I want to come back to you and really let you talk about what Eyes Open International is doing to try to deal with this issue.
Yeah, so Eyes Open International, Lucy May, is focused on the prevention, education, protection, and empowerment of victims, survivors, vulnerable populations, and community members globally. Classic example is just last week, one family from India, husband 35 years old, wife 33 years old, son 11 years old and daughter 3 years old died on the border of Canada, just 12 meters away from the US border. They froze to death. They paid 65 lakhs, that's $100,000 to enter the United States of America illegally. I was in India and I create awareness, Eyes Open International, that entering America legally is heaven, but entering America illegally is hell. So the overall objective is to educate people back in my own country, that's in India, and telling them, do not enter the United States of America illegally or undocumented. And it is many times I blame or I tell people who are here, like including many people who are foreign nationals, they do not share the actual pain or trauma that every individual goes through in this country. So Eyes Open International believes that in the United States of America, Lucy May, that we will be saving victims of labor trafficking nonstop. There is no full stop. Because America is the destination, but countries like Mexico, Guatemala, India, Pakistan, Nepal, Ghana, Nigeria is the source. So to create a stop in labor trafficking, we have to go and educate our people back in our own country and tell them, please do not enter. If you're entering, come with your eyes open, have the resources, the hotline numbers, like you rightly said, Lucy May, that 513-800-1863. Or else, if you're coming on a B1, B2 visa, come and stay for 5 months and then go back. If you're coming on a C1D visa, go on the ship, do not jump, do not get married. Even if you get married, that visa can never, ever be corrected. So many people are not educated on this subject. So thank you very much, Lucy May. And before I end, I would like to wish you a very happy birthday. I know today is your birthday, and today is India's Republic Day. So thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you, Harold. I want to thank all our guests, Ohio Department of Public Safety Office of Criminal Justice Services State Anti-Trafficking Coordinator Maria Bush, the Salvation Army Anti-Human Trafficking Manager and End Slavery Cincinnati Coalition Manager Aaron Meyer, and Eyes Open International President and Co-Founder Harold D'Souza. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for this show is Selena Reeder. The assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Lucy May.